graduate from high school, get a job, get married, and then have kids. Is that the secret to success? A lot of people think so, and Ohio lawmakers are proposing that success sequence as a high school graduation requirement. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the proposal, the research behind it, and concerns critics are raising are American Enterprise Institute Senior Fellow and founder of Vertex Partnership Academies, Ian Rowe, Ohio Federation of Teachers President, Melissa Cropper, and University of Notre Dame Economics Professor and Director of the Strengthening Families Research Initiative, Melissa Carney. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ian, can you explain more about what the success sequence is, and does it come from research originally published by the Brookings Institute?
Yeah, and thank you for the opportunity to speak on this important subject. As you mentioned, I'm a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, where I study the factors that drive upward mobility. And I also run a high school, Vertex Partnership Academies, in the Bronx, in a low-income community where we're very focused on this idea of how do we break the cycle of intergenerational disadvantage and put young people on a path to economic prosperity. And this data that you've just cited, the success sequence does come from think tanks, actually, on both the left and the right. It was originated at the Brookings Institution many years ago. And it was data that simply says if a young person completes at least their high school degree, then gets a full-time job of any kind, so they learn the dignity and discipline of work. And then if they have children, if they get married first, that series of decisions, education, work, marriage, then children, if decisions are made in that order, the data shows that young people who follow that series of decisions, 97% of the time, avoid poverty. And the vast majority enter the middle class or beyond. This is very crucial information for young people of all backgrounds, but particularly those who are in communities where seeing adults who haven't necessarily made those series of decisions, it's just really good information. And we teach it in our high school. In the same way that we talk about the importance of college, we talk about the importance of apprenticeships. There's a lot of things that we do in our school to foster this idea of upward mobility. Teaching the success sequence is one of those practices that we put in place.
And you mentioned this 97% success rate figure. Where does that come from, that 97%?
Well, that's the original research that was done at the Brookings Institute by Ron Haskins and Isabel Sawhill. It's been replicated in many other settings. I know Melissa Kearney has done work in this arena. Brad Wilcox, Institute for Family Studies. So it's well accepted that decisions in this order are likely. Now, again, it's very important that it's not 100%. We all know examples of young people born to single parents who've ultimately been successful. We also know young people born into married two-parent households that weren't successful economically. But the data is overwhelming. And if you're a school and you want to help young people understand what are the likely rewards or consequences associated with different series of life decisions, teaching the success sequence certainly exposes kids to the kinds of decisions in their control that give them the greatest likelihood of economic success.
I know subsequent research from Brookings found that the sequence is much more effective for white people than for black people. Do you think, Ian, that points to other structural problems that can make it more difficult for some kids to succeed?
Well, like with everything, no one intervention is a silver bullet. I've seen that research from Brookings, and yeah, there's slight differences in terms of what the economic outcomes are. But if you compare the outcomes of individuals across race that follow the steps related to the success sequence, and then compare that to young people, again, across race, who, for example, perhaps had a child outside of marriage or wasn't employed, the numbers are dramatically different. So, of course, nothing is a guarantee, but these steps are reliably associated with economic prosperity, regardless of race.
Professor Carney, you've written and researched about the importance of two-parent families for children's success and well-being. Can you explain briefly what your research has found?
I came to this topic very much studying economic factors and the role of government programs in leading to higher rates of upward mobility and decreasing poverty. And so I really came to the importance of family structure because so many of the other economic policies and so many of the government programs that I had studied and that other economists and social scientists had studied, in all the studies, we were just seeing that family structure and family background was really the critical determinant of kids' outcomes in life. And even at a community level, the share of kids in a household growing up in two-parent households is the strongest predictor of rates of upward mobility from that community. And so it wasn't where I started. It was where I landed after two decades of research, realizing that if we're committed to reducing poverty, reducing inequality, fostering upward mobility, we have to make these issues of family structure, we have to put them on par with our emphasis on education and work as something that's really important and tends to get short shrift in our policy conversations around poverty and inequality. So this is really, you know, basically two decades of research drawing on my own work and the work of other scholars that led me to that conclusion. So the data is really undeniable. One really can't take issue with the premise of this kind of approach, the premise that we see in the data, hundreds of studies, people who do the things that Ian was talking about that are championed by the success sequence, they have much more economic security in life. I have to say, This notion that this is only true for white children is unbelievably counterproductive and just cannot be supported by rigorous scholarship. So I say that in full recognition that there are huge differences in opportunities and outcomes across races in this country. And so looking at the importance of school and work and family structure does not in any way deny that. But let me just put some statistics on it since you brought up that point about race differences. If we look at white children whose parents don't have a college degree, because we know poverty is much higher for children whose parents don't have a college degree. If their parents are married, poverty rates are 8%. If their parents are not married, poverty rates are 27%. If we look at Black children whose mothers don't have a college degree, if their mother's married, their poverty rate is 11%. If their mother is not married, poverty rate is 36%. So the differences across family structure for Black children are even larger than the differences across races within family structure. And the reason, again, why that's important is because we really, it's not productive to sort of pit racial discrimination against the importance of having two parents in the home. These both things are true.
Melissa, have you seen any data on this? I guess I wonder what you think about these arguments.
When we started looking at the success sequence when it came up in the legislature in the spring, and in looking at the information I was able to find online, the charts that I looked at showed that the two most important factors are actually graduating and getting a job, which we've been teaching for years in our school systems. That's why we're a little concerned about the success sequence, and I'm not sure what that curriculum actually looks like. How is it different from the social emotional learning programs we're doing, et cetera? But given that the two most important factors are actually graduating and getting a job, what we continue to push on is, what are we doing to make sure that our children, our students who graduate, actually have exposure to good career opportunities, and that we're doubling down on career tech education in our school, doubling down on funding for our schools so that students can have that kind of exposure to different career opportunities, and really focusing in on what are the work opportunities for students. Because to simply say, get a job, Again, that's what we've been saying for years, but what are we embedding within our education system that are actually helping children find their future career pathways? And then once I get those career pathways, you know, does that, you know, again, it comes down to causation, correlation, how does all that come together? Does getting a good job also lead to a successful family type structure also? So our emphasis is more on the career part of it. And as a union, I would also say that, you know, again, this cherry picking of which data we want to use on what makes a family successful and brings them out of poverty. There's also a lot of data around getting a good union job and how that, you know, being in a union actually leads to better benefits, you know, healthcare, retirement benefits, all those things that also bring you out of poverty too. So when we testified in the spring about this, we testified as an interested party, and that was really the piece that we wanted to draw out. When we're talking about careers, when we're talking about opportunities for students, why don't we include in this the importance of getting a job that has good benefits and that has a retirement plan and that has a healthcare plan and has sick leave policy and all those things you typically get when you have a union job.
We're talking about a bill that would make teaching the success sequence a high school graduation requirement in Ohio. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Ian, I want to circle back to you. Do you think it would work in your high school, or do you all teach more than the idea of, hey, graduate from high school and get a good job? I mean, isn't that enough? Why is it important to teach the marriage and children part of this?
Well, again, thanks for the question. Again, our focus is helping many of our young people break the intergenerational cycle of disadvantage. So the series of education, work, marriage, and children speaks to generational impact. And to the point where, you know, do education and work matter? Of course, they're the two first elements of the success sequence. And it is important to expose students to different pathways during secondary experience. So for example, in our school, our juniors and seniors can choose career pathways, which include biomedical science, computer science, early childhood development, where they can become credentialed at the end of high school to be an assistant teacher in a Montessori classroom, or potentially be a phlebotomist who could take blood as part of a biomedical apprenticeship with hospitals here in New York. So clearly, we want to remove the obstacles that would make it difficult for a young person to get on the pathway of following the success sequence. That's why it's great that in Ohio, you have a lot of school choice legislation that gives young people the ability to access a great education. And yes, you definitely want to have more opportunities for apprenticeships in high school so you can get more exposure to different potential pathways. And then the last piece of the success sequence, to Melissa's point, is very important data, which frankly is undeniable across race, around the value as it relates to two-parent households. And so that's why we feel it's very critical to teach this. And if you'll indulge me in just one quick story, you know, when we were designing our high school, we were traveling across the country looking at great high schools. And we stopped in a high school in New Orleans to a class of ninth graders. And we said to them, if you knew that there were a series of decisions in your control that when young people just like you followed that series of decisions, 97% of the time they avoided poverty, would you want to know what those decisions are? And they looked at me and they said, well, of course, why wouldn't I want to know? Why wouldn't we want to know? And I said, well, there's some grownups who think that somehow teaching this information would be harmful for you, or, you know, so therefore, I'm not going to tell you. And the students, these ninth graders, 14-year-old kids from, you know, from very low-income backgrounds, said, what are you talking about? You tell us. You can't tease this information and not tell us. You tell us and then let us decide if this is information that could be beneficial to me in the decisions that I make in my own life. And it was a great example of how sometimes we have self-anointed gatekeepers who want to withhold information, crucial information for young people to help them make better decisions. So in that context, we then had a conversation about the success sequence. We talked about it in what I call a descriptive fashion, not prescriptive, meaning not saying you must do this, but saying, look, you're going to be making some big decisions over the course of the next 10 to 15 years of your life around education, work, relationships, family formation. And here's one series of decisions that yields 97% of the data avoidance of poverty. Here are other series of decisions that yield dramatically lower chances of avoiding poverty, but you decide. And for me, that was a great example of why teaching this information is so crucial, in addition to the other things that we're doing, school choice, exposure to multiple career pathways. Those are important too. They're necessary, but not sufficient.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. We do have a couple callers on the line. Please stay with us. We have to take a short break. And later in the program, the business of Trivia Nights. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the success sequence, graduating from high school, getting a job, getting married, and then having kids. Some Ohio lawmakers want to make teaching that sequence a high school graduation requirement. My guests are American Enterprise Institute Senior Fellow Ian Rowe, Ohio Federation of Teachers President Melissa Cropper, and University of Notre Dame Economics Professor Melissa Carney. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have a caller on the line. Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for your patience. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hello. I wanted to ask the researchers how they attempted to make sure that they weren't reversing cause and effect. That is to say, they treat very much this success sequence as a choice, but could there be other factors, like, for example, the quality of the schools where you grew up and the kind of household that you grew up in, that maybe make you much more less likely to graduate from high school and be able to get a job? Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Professor Carney, I'd like to direct that question to you since you are a researcher here with us.
Jeff is exactly right that the arrows point in both directions on these kinds of issues. Kids who grow up in economically disadvantaged backgrounds and attend sort of schools with worse student outcomes, they're much less likely to finish high school. They're much less likely to get a higher level of education. All of that makes them less likely to be married and have higher household earnings as an adult. We see this really, really vicious cycle. And of course, all of these studies are based on very sophisticated, rigorous econometric techniques that try and parse out the direction of causality. And so what I can say from that is Jeff is entirely right that the causality runs both ways. That's why it's so important to break the cycle. So for instance, we have mounds of evidence that boys who grow up in homes without dads are less likely to achieve higher levels of education. They're more likely to get in trouble with the criminal justice system. And we need to break that apart. We need to help those boys grow up to be employed better men who can be present fathers for their sons in order to break this vicious cycle.
Thank you.
May I comment also, please?
Please, sure thing.
Sure. So, and I really appreciate the question because, again, for a long time now, we have been trying to incorporate social emotional learning programs in our schools, and it's one of the things that have actually come under attack, which I'm not sure why. But the five core competencies of a social emotional learning program are self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, and responsible decision-making. Those are all components that help lead to successful relationships moving forward after you graduate. So again, just telling a student that you need to get married before you have children doesn't make it happen. What kind of skills are we actually teaching our children in schools, which we're trying to incorporate through a social emotional learning program that allows students to make those kind of decisions as they move forward? That's what we want to double down on, helping kids at a very young age develop these core competencies so they can make responsible decisions after they graduate.
We have another caller on the line. Hi, Linnell. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi, thank you. So with a focus on marriage first, then family second, do I correctly assume that we will also be supportive and encouraging of family structures of same-sex couples, LGBTQ family structures? Are we supportive and encouraging of adoption or using artificial insemination to allow our LGBTQ couples to also experience successful child rearing?
Melissa Cropper, I know, thank you so much, Linnell, for that question. Melissa Cropper, I know you've looked at this legislation pretty closely. Do you have thoughts for Linnell on all that?
Well, we certainly, our interest is making sure that all students are successful regardless of what their family situation is and what type of relationship choices that they make. We are concerned, again, looking at the success sequence. We don't know exactly what is in that curriculum, but we would certainly encourage being in that curriculum all types of family situations, because we know that our students come from all different backgrounds. And we're not here to try to decide what type of family is the best type of family. We're here to support all families and all students and to see all children be successful.
Thanks for that question, Linnell. We also got an email from Joe. Joe writes, is this part of the neonatalist agenda? Ian, I want to get your thoughts just briefly on that.
I'm not familiar with what the neonatalist agenda is. This is driven by the effort to help more young people have information that allows them to break the intergenerational cycle of disadvantage. In the schools that I lead in New York, for example, the non-marital birth rate in the communities we serve is 84.5%. And again, that's not necessarily a guarantee of failure for the kids born in this environment, nor is it a guarantee of success if they were born into a married two-parent household. But the data is overwhelming that the economic prospects for those children differ dramatically. And we also, to Melissa Cropper's point, we also certainly are incorporating into our teaching about the success sequence, relationship skills, healthy relationships. Part of the reason that becomes more effective is that you tell the kids the data that it gives them a reason to develop those skills so that they have an understanding of what's the pot at the end of the rainbow, that if I develop these skills and make these kinds of decisions, what are the likely outcomes? This very much is a curriculum around the idea of empowerment, giving young people the decisions to make the what's best for them, presuming they have the best information. And in terms of different family structures, the data is overwhelming that a married two-parent household is the best environment for economic prospects, for raising of children. To say that is not demonizing other family structures. It's just being honest and open with our students so they have the best information about how they'd like to lead their lives.
Melissa Cropper, I want to ask you another question. You've talked about questions about the curriculum that this success sequence would have, the things that schools are already teaching. Do you have any concerns that this could be an unfunded mandate? Or I've read some critics of this bill saying it would be shifting the spotlight away from the way the state is or is not funding public schools.
Well, it certainly flies in the face of local control. And that, again, is something it seems like we are a local control state until the party in charge decides that they want to dictate or mandate what actually gets taught. So that is one of our big concerns, that it flies in the face of local control to mandate that something has to be taught. Again, not knowing what exactly this curriculum is going to look like, who exactly is involved in developing this curriculum, and then saying that it has to be taught. Those are all concerns that we have. And then also concerns about, and again, maybe Ian or Professor Carney can answer this question, but I really have not seen the data yet that shows that when this, I've seen the data on the families, et cetera. I have not seen the data on when the sequence has been taught, we have seen success patterns change by a certain percentage. So this, for example, this ninth grade cohort went through this success sequence and they now have better outcomes than the graduating classes before them. So without that kind of data also, again, to mandate something where we're not even sure that it has has made an impact is problematic. We would be much more concerned, again, about funding our schools properly. We still have a problem with that in the state of Ohio, that we're not properly funding our schools, and especially doubling down on career tech opportunities and apprenticeship programs. When you talk about something being life-changing, I mean, I've got a story myself of a student in New Lexington, Ohio, who went through an apprenticeship program, and his mother broke down crying during when they had the ceremony about it, because he was the first person in his family to not only graduate from high school, but to get a union job that was going to pay $60,000 once he got out of school. That's life-changing, and we need to be providing more of those opportunities. And what I've struggled with around the success sequence, it seems to be an inordinate amount of energy and time spent on that third piece, the family piece, without doubling down on funding those other two pieces, graduating and getting the ability to get a good job, exposure to good jobs.
Melissa just raised this question about data. Ian, I did watch your testimony. Am I correct that you're teaching this in the school that you founded, but it hasn't been around long enough to have that cohort data? Am I right about that?
Oh, well, in our school, we started in 2022. We have been teaching it, but yes, in our school. But there are lots of other places in which the success sequence has been taught. The Dibbles Institute, which has produced the Love Notes curriculum, that has been implemented over decades and have incredible data. And Ms. Cropper, I think we'll happy to send to you the dramatic reductions in teen pregnancy, for example, certainly reductions in non-marital births. So we can, this curriculum doesn't come out of nowhere. And the framework, I'm sure, that's being produced in Ohio will leverage these curricula that have been in place for decades that focus on relationship skills, healthy relationships, ways to reduce teen pregnancy, ways to reduce non-marital births. So the data is definitely there. Okay. And I happily can share, certainly Love Notes is just one example coming out of the Dibbles Institute that has a pretty strong track record of actual results that have produced.
Okay, I apologize. We're going to have to leave it there. I really appreciate everybody's time today. This has been a great conversation. I've been talking with American Enterprise Institute Senior Fellow Ian Rowe, Ohio Federation of Teachers President Melissa Cropper, and University of Notre Dame Economics Professor Melissa Carney. Thank you all so much for your time today. Up next, the business of Trivia Nights. This is Cincinnati Edition.